On Tuesday, I left my CEO job, and on Thursday, I was on the other side of the desk as a student in the seminary.
You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
Our Getting to Know the Council of Presidents series today takes us to the Mid-South District. Mid-South, is that like Midwest, but South?
No, it's the greatest district in the entire Senate, as far as I'm concerned.
Today's episode of The Coffee Hour is underwritten in part by Concordia University Chicago. You can learn more about Concordia University Chicago by visiting CU.
Our guest today, the Reverend Dr. Roger Pavla, he's president of the Mid-South District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. In his words, the best district in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Dr. Pavla, welcome to The Coffee Hour.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I am looking forward to today's conversation. We're having fun with this series, Getting to Know the Council of Presidents. And the first part of the episodes in this series starts off with the lightning round. Are you ready, sir?
I am ready.
Right. Favorite color?
Blues or greens?
All right. Those have become very popular answers. Favorite cuisine?
Favorite cuisine would be Mexican or Chinese.
All right.
All right. Favorite book? And we know you love the Bible. We know you love the Lutheran confessions. On top of that, what's your favorite book?
I think the Tale of Two Cities was very good and inspirational.
Okay. This is a very important question. Favorite office supply?
Office Depot.
All right. Favorite dessert?
Bananas Foster.
Ooh. Oh, we're going to have to unpack that one probably. We'll come back to that though.
All right.
Favorite vacation destination?
Smoky Mountains in the Great Mid-South District.
All right. Favorite hymn?
Jerusalem the Golden.
All right. Last one. Favorite time of day?
When I can sit with my wife and just relax from the evening.
Boy, I'm really curious to know more about some of these, but we'll come back to that later in our conversation. Pastor Pavla, tell us, where did you grow up?
I grew up in northern Minnesota, about 90 miles away from the Canadian border and about 90 miles away from Fargo, North Dakota, out there in the farm and lakes country. My father was a manager of a grain elevator. My mother was a housekeeper. And I have one sister, and I have 56 cousins. And many of them were in that area.
56 cousins. That's an impressive number. So tell us about your childhood, about growing up, the path that eventually led to going to seminary.
Well, that is such an interesting story. When I was about 4 years old, my grandfather passed away, my paternal grandfather. And we had a pastor in our community at our Trinity Lutheran Church who had taken me aside, took me up into the chancel at the church. We had a little bit of a discussion as a four-year-old with this pastor. I said, "I don't know why the people are crying. Grandpa is with Jesus. Shouldn't we be happy?" And he looked at me and he said, "Someday you're going to be a pastor." And really was close to my heart at that particular time. Throughout my career, doing my undergraduate and graduate work, I was always attached to the church. We've been very active members. I've been blessed to have a wife that is very dedicated to the church as well, and children as well. And finally, after 23 years of being a hospital CEO, I made the leap into seminary, age 45, and was baptized, was ordained on the 5th anniversary of my baptism, on the very day, the very hour, and by the man who baptized me 50 years prior to that. It was been a joy. It has just absolutely been an amazing walk.
Wow. What an amazing coincidence. Like, wow, that's like full circle. That's
right. And amazing. We didn't plan it that way. It was just the way things developed. It was great.
Tell us about the seminary formation. What was that like going to seminary? I think you said at 45. What was that like going to seminary after a long career as a hospital CEO? What do you remember from seminary that are some of your highlights?
Well, yeah. And what was so interesting was that I had been teaching in different colleges in adjunct and had invited faculty because I had my MBA out of the University of Minnesota. And on Tuesday, I left my CEO job, and on Thursday, I was on the other side of the desk as a student in the seminary. They asked if I could possibly join them for that particular semester when President John Grothe called me and said that I had been accepted into the seminary. I said, yeah, I can do this. And he said, well, good, join us on Thursday, which gave me 2 days to pack and drive to St. Catharines. Absolutely loved it. I was older than some of the professors that were at the seminary. It was a small seminary, and it was just an absolute great joy to be there. When Pastor Grothe took me aside, he asked me if there was anything in particular that I was looking for. And I said, well, I'm not usually very good at languages. So I said, I'll take one language this year, another language next year. And he stopped me mid-sentence and he said, baloney. He said, anybody that has an MBA is not going to have problems with the language. I don't know what that meant, but he said, you're going to take both Greek and Hebrew at the same time, and then we're going to have four other classes for you to take. So he was my advisor through every one of the years. He and I became absolutely best of friends, and many of the men that were on the faculty, John Stevenson and so on, were absolutely fantastic. I was able to do mentoring, Greek, reading Greek and Hebrew. By the time we got to the second year, then we had conversational English classes with the international students that were there. It was really quite an experience. I was just, I loved absolutely every minute of it. It was great.
How did you manage Greek and Hebrew at the same time? That blows my mind a little bit, having to learn both of those.
Well, I had to get new glasses, Sarah, because the vowel pointing was just throwing me off. But I have just absolutely loved the languages, and I've just dived into them. It's just been fantastic. And of course, if I had to make a choice about confessions or languages, it would be difficult. It would be very difficult. But I love systematic theology and languages.
Yeah, other than the languages, tell us more about some of your other favorite memories, experiences, professors in your seminary experience, especially at St. Catharines. Seminary doesn't come up quite as much.
No, it doesn't. And because I had some other skills from my business background, they had me actually operate and run the bookstore for that seminary. And then they found out that I had at one time had a first class plumber's license. So I changed all the plumbing to the seminary. And also I built two garages for the professors and remodeled a couple of their homes. It was just a delight. Dr. Stevenson and I would go to the gym at Brock University at least two or three times a week. And we'd probably have more time talking about theology on the racquetball's court or in the sauna at the gyms over there than we did in the classroom. It was just a phenomenal experience. And I just absolutely enjoyed every aspect of the ministry.
So take us from your seminary formation now into the field as a pastor. Did you go into the parish from there?
I did. I had actually three congregations that had asked for me. My home district in Minnesota North had asked, and the central district in Canada had asked, and then the place where I was in my vicarage, I had a convertible vicarage, and I was in New Hampshire for that, and they had also asked, and the one that won out was central. The central district in Canada. Got to meet Ray Holm, just a fantastic district president. Went into a congregation in Beauséjour, Manitoba, which was about 45 minutes north of Winnipeg. Absolutely loved it. The congregation grew pretty substantially. Then we discovered that as an American citizen, there had been a change in the tax laws in Canada that all of my pension programs that I had accumulated during my hospital career would be considered to be ordinary income when it came to the Canadian taxation system. I worked with Ralph Mahon, who was the president of the Senate up there at that time. It was a huge drain on not only on the ministries, but other industries that they began to realize that which was called the Bronfman Law required that we'd have to report that sort of income. We had no reason for us to leave, but we had three calls at once in the United States, and one that was the least attractive to us was where God placed us. And we went to Cookeville, Tennessee, but I absolutely fell in love with the congregation. The congregation worked very hard on ministry, and we went from about 200 members, and over a course of 12 years, we were up to 685 members when I was elected as district president. And it was all the people. The people were so engaged and behind what it is that we were doing, and recognizing that they were the witnesses. I mean, our favorite Bible passage in that congregation was from 1 Peter, where we talk about that we are the witnesses of the gospel of Christ, and the people embraced it and really ran with it. It was great.
We have more to talk about with the Reverend Dr. Roger Pavla, president of the Mid-South District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, right after we take a quick break. You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University Chicago. I'm thrilled to announce the Prepared to Serve Church Professional Guarantee. Any new student in one of CUC's six church work programs will pay no more than $5,000 in annual tuition and required fees guaranteed. Prepared to Serve is a donor-funded initiative. Support future church work students by becoming a funding partner at cuchicago.edu/prepared-to-serve. Concordia University Chicago. With Christ at the center, we stand tall for the church.
Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
We're talking with the Reverend Dr. Roger Pavla, president of the Mid-South District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And let's talk about the Mid-South District. You've already stated that it's the best district in the LCMS. So tell us about what the Mid-South District is. Where is it? I'm guessing somewhere mid-south of something.
Right. Well, it's mid-south of Mason-Dixon line, basically. I think every one of the district presidents that you would talk to would say the same thing, that they're, in their opinion, their district is the best district in the Synod. But I have reasons to believe all of that. I think you go back to 2015 and 2018, we were doing each one in cooperation with our LWML chapter here across the Mid-South District. And every district for the past 35 years had shown a substantial decline in their total membership. When we did each one reach one with the LWML, we actually added about 1,600 new people to our roles throughout the district. It appeared in our publications, the Recorder and so on, just indicating that that people were doing the same thing that I talked about earlier, and that is we embrace the idea of 1 Peter chapter 1 and 2, where we are to declare the excellencies of Him who has called us out of darkness into His marvelous light. Once we were not a people, but now we are a people of God. And that really hit home, and everything was growing in the right direction. Then all of a sudden, 2019, boom, we got hit with COVID. And the opposite started to happen. The LWML and our district are actually moving in the direction of redoing that particular program once again. The Mid-South District consists of the three states that were taken from what was called the Western District And that was 60 years ago that we started what was called the Mid-South District, and then Missouri District emerged from as a single district from there as well. We include all of the state of Arkansas, all of the state of Tennessee, and the western half of Kentucky. We have congregations also in Mississippi, Oklahoma, and in Virginia that are somewhat adjacent to our district. So it is the Mid-South. We're not Deep South. We're not just South. We are Mid-South, right south of the Mason-Dixon line.
What would you say is unique, aside from the geography that makes up the Mid-South district? Is there anything that you would say is unique about Mid-South district?
Well, absolutely. I think that we are somewhat of a mirrored image of what is happening in the Midwest with the farm industries. It used to be where a family of 8 or 10 children would be on a farm of, you know, maybe 450 acres or 600 acres, whatever the case may be. And now today, we have seen that the rice farmers of Arkansas, for example, are doing several sections of land, and they're doing it with one or two children. It is something that has changed dramatically in our area. It's done something that's quite dramatically different than or indifferent than what it is that's going on with the Midwest and even that portion of Canada where we served so enjoyably for 3.5 years, where Manitoba, Saskatchewan, and parts of Ontario are very much agricultural, and they experience the same kinds of things. So our families are smaller. The congregations become smaller. Some towns have actually disappeared and become ghost towns. That's the reality of what we're dealing with here. But because we're 1,000 miles long, we also have a great diversity that is taking place in the Mid-South District. We see people from the East Coast and West Coast that are moving to Tennessee in particular, because we have a very positive outlook on business. We're growing very rapidly because we have a tax base that does not have income tax. And we are receiving people from the north coming away from the bad weather down or the winter time there. And we have people that are, we call halfbacks, that are coming out of Florida and the Carolinas and Louisiana and Alabama. They're coming halfway back because of what has been happening with their weather. The beauty of all of this sort of thing is that God has placed in us a great opportunity to be able to serve an entirely different kind of population than any other place in the world. And we're also dealing with a diversity of ethnic groups here that I think may not be replicated in too many other places across the Synod. So it's provided us with great opportunities to expand our ministries.
And the Mid-South District is a very unique place. My husband is from the Mid-South District, so I know very much about the northwest corner of Arkansas, a very beautiful, beautiful area up there for sure. A lot of people moving there. A lot of gems in the Mid-South District for sure.
It's gorgeous. Yeah. Northwest Arkansas is absolutely gorgeous. It is one of the areas that is one of the most rapidly growing areas of the United States. There are 5 Fortune 500 companies that are located up there. There's building growth that is going on. In fact, I just came back from there this last weekend looking at the geographic and picture of what it is that is happening. Tremendous amount of diversity. One of the congregations that I visited this weekend had 12 different countries represented in their church membership. 12 different ones. It was just, it's amazing to me. But we're all coming together unified in Christ, which is just fantastic.
Absolutely. Yeah. Tell us about your duties as the president of the Mid-South District. What do you get to do?
Well, I have the joy of being able to be the pastor to the pastors and teachers and rostered workers in our district. We keep a very close relationship with that. I have an opportunity to do visitations in all of our congregations and schools. This is in our planning stages, that we are working with the Concordia University system, recognizing that the Set Apart to Serve program has been interested in finding more young people and second career people that are interested in ministry tracks, either it's teachers, DCEs, deaconesses, pastors, you name it. And I have been working with Dr. Jameson Hardy to find the possibility of being able to have a junior college of one of our university systems here in the Mid-South District. We have four potential sites that we're looking at. Why is it an interest to the CUS for us to have something like that is that after post-secondary education, most students stay within 300 miles of their home to take their undergraduate work. The closest university that we have to us in the Concordia system is Seward, which is far more than 300 miles away from us. So we have this great expanse of 1,000 miles from Northwest Arkansas all the way over to Virginia that really does not have a post-secondary education opportunity. So we're developing that, and we're also looking at bringing in more schools, recognizing that when Lutheranism emigrated from Europe, the first thing that they did is establish schools, and from there the schools grew into congregations. And we are encouraging the possibility of having at least another four schools added to our complement of schools here in the Mid-South District. So it's been very, very busy, and we have a very wonderful, powerful staff that we have here in the office, and a tremendous amount of work that's being done by our board of directors and the various commissions that we put together. We are here with the pleasure of being able to work for the building of the kingdom of God according to his will. And it gives us a joy each and every day to come to work.
Pastor Pavla, why are you a pastor in the LCMS today?
I was born and raised in a different synod. I was born and raised in the National Evangelical Lutheran Church, which was a Finnish Lutheran church. It was the confessional conservative Finnish people that in 1958, I believe it was, we were sending our men to the pastors to become pastors in the Springfield and Fort Wayne seminaries. And it was just that being able to sustain an independent Finnish congregation, which comes natural to the Finns, is that we were going to join in with the LCMS and see if we could bring our strengths together. And at that particular time, of course, Gerhard Aho was a professor for the seminary, and we were related to that connection. And it was an absolute wonderful way for us to be able to get involved with the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod. Why the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod? Because it is the single body that I've been able to identify throughout my life and shared with others that it remains confessional and faithful to the Holy Scripture. And those two items are the ones that have just absolutely been my foundation and my ground throughout my entire lifetime.
All right, we need to unpack some of the lightning round questions. There are a few answers that you were very, very particular about, and I won't steal the food one because I know Andy will want to ask that one. However, okay. I will ask you about the Great Smoky Mountains. What is it about the Great Smoky Mountains that you love so much?
There's such a diversity out there. There's wildlife. There are family events. Whatever it is you want. I have a particular vice that is called golf, and they have tremendous golf courses out there in the Smokies. There's one that I call it a place where it's Billy Goat Golf, you know, because there's not a level spot in the whole thing, but it is absolutely beautiful. We are bringing our pastors from the East Conference for our pastors retreat, and the wives love coming out there because you can go out and stay in the cabins, and you can go up to the National Park, go up to Clayman's Dome, do that sort of hiking. There's a number of waterfall hiking that they can have. And There's bear, deer, elk, turkeys. I mean, it's an outdoor wonderland, and it's just absolutely beautiful 12 months out of the year, which is just phenomenal. It's great. I love it.
It is beautiful. I am having trouble picturing golf on a mountain. I believe you. I trust you on that, that you can play golf in the Smokies. You answered the question about your favorite dessert very boldly and promptly. So what's the story behind your love for Bananas Foster?
Bananas Foster was one of the, during my hospital career, I would take potential members of my medical staff or my administrative staff, I would take them to a place called the Burgundy Room. And the first meal was, the main meal was a Chateaubriand for two. And the appetizers were just wonderfully prepared escargot. That kind of turned some people off. But the highlight of the evening was when the maitre d' would come to your table with copper-based cookware and take bananas and put it in with ice cream and put it in with Hudson Bay 151 rum and burn it at your table and then put it in your ice. It was fabulous. It was probably one of the main reasons that we were able to attract certain very good specialty pastors or physicians and surgeons onto our medical staff. It was absolutely phenomenal. As a matter of fact, the governor of South Dakota asked me to be to host a fellow that was coming in from CBS News, Charles Kuralt. I said, sure, I'll take care of him. And picked him up at the airport, brought him to the television studios, and then we went out for dinner. And I had just what I've just described. We had the escargot, we had the Chateaubriand, and then we had the Bananas Foster. And I had Charles Kuralt there, and he said, "I'm going to have another evening here." And I said, "Well, yeah, what would you like to do for dinner tomorrow night?" He said, "I want to come back." So that was it.
Bananas Foster closes the deal every time. Got it.
Absolutely. There you go.
Absolutely.
Excellent advice.
Our guest today, the Reverend Dr. Roger Pavla, president of the Mid-South District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Thank you so much for being our guest in this special series. It's been a lot of fun.
It's been an honor. Thank you so very much. God bless you.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.